We will hear argument in number 21-1210, Alaniz versus McDonough. Mr. Dohakis, please begin when you're ready.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. On behalf of appellant, I do want to thank the court for this opportunity to present his appeal. This appeal concerns one issue. How does the Veterans Court make a determination under 7261B2 that an error is prejudicial? More specifically, we're asking this court to answer two questions. Do some errors have the natural effect of producing prejudice, and if so, does this one? Or, if no error can have the natural effect of producing prejudice, under what framework should the Veterans Court assess prejudice? To date, there's not much guidance. In Tadlock, this court recently held that whenever reviewing harmless error, the Veterans Court cannot make de novo findings of fact. Under existing precedent, the court has primarily reviewed whether the Veterans Court must review for harmless error. And in Simmons, this court rejected the appellant's attempt to create a per se rule of prejudice in that case, because it could lead to a finding of harm where under the totality of the record, no harm exists. And here we ask this court to find that some errors, in particular the one committed by the board, has the natural effect of producing prejudice. To understand why, we need to look at the specific error committed by the board. On page 12 of the appendix, we see quite clearly that the board erred by finding that a regulation 3.317 does not apply solely because his illness had a diagnosis. But pursuant to the 38 U.S.C. 1117 and 3.317, Gulf War veterans like the appellant, for Gulf War veterans, VA must pay compensation for any qualifying chronic disability. And this, the regulation defines that as one that is either undiagnosed or, as applies to this case, a multi-MUCMI. Where either the etiology or cause or the pathophysiology of the illness is inconclusive. And this is the Veterans Court's ruling in Stewart v. Wilkie.
The Veterans Court stated... Mr. Dohakis, this is Judge Taranto. Are you asking us to say that the Veterans Court has authority to create kind of natural effect non-case-specific rules, that that's the legal principle you want us to articulate, or do you want us to articulate a principle that under the regulation at issue here, there is a more categorical, not all factors, case-by-case, harmlessness rule that applies?
Your Honor, I think both, really. I think primarily what we're looking for is a ruling whether the Veterans Court can find some errors naturally produce prejudice. And I as we talked about in our briefs, they've done that. In Vogan, in Vasquez, Flores, they've identified these errors where they naturally produce prejudice.
So to continue this, so at the level of the legal proposition that the Veterans Court can recognize some errors as naturally producing prejudice without more case-specific inquiry, that principle is not actually in dispute. Because you said the Veterans Court has in fact recognized that principle by doing so in some context.
Yes, Your Honor, that is true in those two cases. And I would ask that I think what we're asking for primarily is a confirmation from this court that that is appropriate, or more specifically, that in this case, by ruling that a regulation does not apply without assessing the two elements, the two separate elements, that it naturally produces prejudice. And those two cases in particular, and Tadlock, in a more general sense, kind of show us why that is so. because the board still has more work to do. As we talked about in our brief, 3.103A requires the board to fully develop the claim before denying it. The duty to assist requires the board to make reasonable attempts to obtain evidence that is necessary to substantiate the claim. And by shortchanging this, the board has essentially said, has shut off an entire category of legal authority for benefits for the appellant here without giving any information to the court or to the appellant as to whether there can be entitlement shown or, as the board said, because it's diagnosed, this regulation cannot apply.
Well, what do you make of what, if I'm remembering right, you'll correct me if I'm not, the kind of Supreme Court, I don't know, let's call it a warning that the Veterans Court being closer to a larger number of veterans claims cases is much better positioned than our court is to do harmless error analysis, and why would that not apply to making the Veterans Court rather than this court the right one to figure out context by context whether there ought to be something like natural effect categorical rule?
Your Honor, I would respond by saying that the caution that you're referring to in Shinseki v. Sanders was not a wholesale prohibition. It was more of a statement that most of the time the Veterans Court is better equipped, particularly when it's a situation that is more dependent upon the specifics of veterans' disability benefits. But I think in this case, the type of error that was committed by excluding a statute for a legally erroneous reason, I'm sorry, a statute and a regulation, and not going through the process of making a determination, making findings of fact, that can never be, that's something that any court can find produces prejudice. Or naturally produces prejudice. I don't think that this is one of those types of cases that is beyond the realm of any court.
So I understand, I guess I'm remembering the lay of the land here to be something like the following, that the regulation at issue, let's say, has three requirements. The board may have gotten requirement number one wrong, but the Veterans Court said it's perfectly plain that there's no evidence of either requirement two or three. Why is that not an easy case for lack of prejudice?
Your Honor, the Veterans Court, to be clear, did not say that there is no evidence. They said simply that the appellant did not point to any evidence. And I would respond to that by saying that particularly in Sanders and the case that it relied on quite heavily to Kotekos, what they talked about there was that often it's very clear to the reviewing court that the error was harmful, and if that's the case, there's no obligation on the appellant to do anything. And I'm looking here for, but if the harm is not clear, and this is in Sanders on page 410, but if the harm is not clear or evident, then and only then does the appellant have the burden of explaining why the erroneous ruling caused harm. And so what I read that to say is that the court must first look to see is the error clear and evident based on what happened here. And I would submit that when an error naturally produces prejudice, like this one does, then there's no obligation on the veteran or the, I'm sorry, the appellant to explain why it does, because it's evident. And to get back to the point that you raised initially, Your Honor, so the error is that, just to be very clear on what the board failed to do, was that you can prove a presumption of benefits, that whatever disability you're suffering from, the VA will presume that it was related to your service if there is it is undiagnosed, which doesn't apply here, or if the etiology is unconclusive or the pathophysiology is inconclusive. The board never reached that question. And in order for the court to then find that it's harmless, I would submit that that requires them to assume a fact had been made that neither of those have been proven. And again, circling back to Tadlock, the Veterans Court can't make findings of fact, whether explicitly or inferred or presumed, because that's left for the board. And that, to me, is the heart of this, the harm that exists in this error, is that the veteran and the court never got the benefit of the agency's explanation for the facts. And more specifically, the veteran didn't get a fully developed claim before the board, because we don't know whether there was more information out there that was needed. We don't know what facts the board would have found. And again, to reiterate, the court is assuming that these facts were not in his favor.
Counsel, earlier you mentioned the Simmons case. Can you tell me how you distinguished that case?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. So Simmons was a request to find per se that the misapplication of a presumption of sound condition was naturally produced prejudice. And what this court ruled is that that is not the type of error that would always per se cause harm. And I'll answer your question, Your Honor, if you'll permit.
Please go ahead, yes.
Okay. So what the Simmons court said was the reason that one can't be a per se rule, or I would say it more specifically that would naturally produce prejudice, is because there can be other situations. There's the nexus. It talks specifically about a nexus because that regulation does not speak directly to nexus as to specifically whether the condition, the disability, is related to service. In this case, it does. By finding the regulation applies, the veteran automatically gets granted benefits. So there's nothing else more there's not other findings that have to be that are outside of this statute or regulation. The second distinguishing characteristic I would say is that in that one, in Simmons, that it was within the context of clear and unmistakable error, which under current precedent requires the claimant to demonstrate that a manifestly different outcome would have occurred. And because the nexus element is not proven by that statute, he could not prevail. In this case, again, there's still the duty to assist still applies where it doesn't in the clear and unmistakable error context, and the presumption guarantees or mandates entitlement to benefits.
Okay, you have gone into your rebuttal time, but we will restore the 3 minutes for rebuttal and hear from the government now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, the court should dismiss Mr. Alaniz's appeal or affirm the Veterans Court decision on appeal. In Mr. Alaniz's reply, he withdrew a number of arguments that we understood were made in his opening brief and explained that he did not intend to make them, and he clarifies other arguments made. For example, he explained that his arguments about the purported interpretation by the Veterans Court of 38 CFR 3.317, that he wasn't claiming that the board misinterpreted that provision. However, during Mr. Allen's argument, I heard a claim that the board had erred on this ground. Also, there was a reference to the Veterans Court making factual findings, and on the reply brief at page 4, Mr. Alanis states that he is not arguing that the Veterans Court made factual findings outside of its jurisdiction, which were the subject of the Tadlock decision. As an initial matter, we note that the Veterans Court determined it was unable to find error based on Mr. Alanis's undeveloped arguments before the Veterans Court. The nature of the appellant's argument, the Veterans Court said, was unclear because he refers to both the concepts of undiagnosed illness and MUCMI, and the Veterans Court noted that it does not find error based on undeveloped arguments. The court has also concluded that undeveloped arguments are waived, and Mr. Alanis does not challenge the Veterans Court's conclusion that his argument was undeveloped. And this is a reason that the court would lack jurisdiction. Although we did not raise this in our brief, we've noted that in the decision of Flowers v. O'Rourke, which this court issued on July 6, 2018, the court explained that when the Veterans Court found that the appellant, Mrs. Flowers, had failed to raise any particularized argument as to how the board erred in applying the statutes and regulations she described, the Veterans Court decision did not involve the validity or interpretation of those or any other regulations or statutes, and Mrs. Flowers, like Mr. Allen, did not challenge whether the Veterans Court erred in applying any rule of law that imposed the initial burden of asserting such an error. Thus, there's no need for the court to reach the question of the standard for determining whether the any alleged error was harmless. The Veterans Court could not determine what error Mr. Alanis was asserting, but it went ahead and determined what it thought those errors, the claim might be, and about undiagnosed illness or MUCMI. And the Veterans Court, turning to the MUCMI question, looked at Mr. Alanis's claim. Mr. Alanis now has pointed out his view that the board erred in its description of 3.317 by referring to undiagnosed illness. But Mr. Alanis made a claim of undiagnosed illness, claiming that his diagnosed psoriasis was an undiagnosed illness. He did not, in fact, raise the issue of whether it was a MUCMI. However, the board itself looked into that question and remanded to for an examination. And as the Veterans Court noted on page 4 of its decision, the examiner found that Mr. Alanis's condition, the psoriasis, was not multi-symptom. Now, Mr. Alanis has, in this argument, has stated numerous times that there must be a he must be entitled to compensation if the etiology or pathophysiology is inconclusive. However, he's simply he's ignoring the definition of a MUCMI. Where in that definition in the regulation, it notes that the illness must be multi-symptom, and the Veterans Court correctly noted that the examiner had found it was not multi-symptom, and Mr. Alanis had never provided any evidence that it was. Given this, it was simply no way that any purported error that was never fully explained by Mr. Alanis, there was no way that any error could have resulted in prejudice, because if the board had not made the error, whatever it was supposed to be, it would not have made a difference, because Mr. Alanis simply cannot be found to have a MUCMI based on the examination in the record that the Veterans Court considered.
Ms. Tantum, this is Judge Toronto. Is there anything else in the regulation that is obviously missing? The reason I ask that is something that you referred to in a footnote of your brief, and that's sort of plain from the record about the board decisions and the medical examiner. Early on, the board translated multi-symptom into multi-system. I think you'll correct me if I'm wrong. Its remand order told the medical examiner to answer the question about multi-system. I don't have any particular reason to think that that is identical to multi-symptom. It's not clear to me, therefore, that the record actually does contain a medical examination conclusion that this is not multi-symptom. What am I to make of that disparity?
Your Honor, as we noted in our brief, Mr. Allen has never raised any concern with the use of the term multi-system, which as we noted, is simply a typo. It was clear that the board was referring to a MUCMI, and it used the term multi-system.
Why would it have been clear to the medical examiner what question that the specific question, and I think maybe in three or four different separate questions, multi-system was used, if I'm remembering correct, and the medical examiner is reading the questions that are supposed to be answered and answers those questions. Should I assume that the medical examiner understood enough about the legal context to understand that that was actually not the question that was intended because of the background law?
Well, I understand that is the Veterans Court understood the examiner to be speaking to the question of MUCMI when using that term, and the board. I'm looking at the board's decision here. The board certainly, when it remanded, the examiner took a look and looked at the questions that plainly relate to the question of MUCMI, such as etiology, pathophysiology. Those were the questions asked by the board. Therefore, it was apparent that the board and the medical examiner were looking at, in addition to undiagnosed illness, simply the next subsection within.
Let me put the point this way. If the medical examiner were a lawyer or had been presented with the actual regulation, and you'll tell me if either of those two things is true, then the medical examiner might well have understood perfectly well that the repeated language, I think this is on A40 or something, multi-system was actually not an accurate word for the question that was intended to be asked. But while the Veterans Court and you and the board presumably understood that was, as you say, a typo, why would we think that the medical examiner understood that?
The types of the issues that that she is looking through, the specific questions and the questions that she is looking at. She's looking at evidence of psoriatic arthritis. She's looking at that would be a symptom and system. It's there's nothing in here that would explain what a system would mean in the context of a medical examination. Therefore, certainly symptom is what a medical examiner would be a doctor would be looking for.
Okay, and I do understand that this is not a point that has been pressed on appeal, but put aside that for 1 second, the multi-symptom requirement of the regulatory conclusive presumption, is there something else in the regulatory requirement that is that the Veterans Court said was not in evidence and therefore the board error about diagnosis, if indeed it was an error, is harmless? Or is it really just this point about multi-symptom?
Well, on page appendix 6, the Veterans Court also noted that Mr. Alanis had not pointed to any evidence reflecting that his psoriasis is multi-symptom or that it could otherwise satisfy the requirements for a MUCMI. So in addition to the fact that that you know it was not multi-symptom, he also had not not provided evidence of any other of the requirements. Those requirements are the lack of a conclusive etiology or the pathophysiology requirement as well. As we noted, etiology is cause, and the examiner did not move to the question of etiology or pathophysiology because the multi-symptom prong was not met. However, etiology meaning cause, the examiner certainly explained that that psoriasis is an autoimmune disorder that is the cause. So there is some evidence as to other requirements whether there's a MUCMI. And I also wanted to point out that the standard, and the court noted that Mr. Allen is asking the court to do exactly what the Supreme Court in Sanders advised against, which is to, in the first instance, decide the whether a type of error has a natural effect. In fact, Sanders said the Federal Circuit is the wrong court to make determinations about the natural effect that certain errors may have in prejudicing a party's substantial rights. It's simply not correct for Mr. Alanis to argue that the Supreme Court left that question open.
Ms. Tantum, this is Judge Toronto again. I'm not entirely sure what the boundaries of Mr. Dohakis's argument is, but suppose the argument is that what was a legal error by the Veterans Court was its own declining to consider whether this is a kind of case for which a natural effects rule would be appropriate. Not that we should make that determination, but that given that the Veterans Court has the legal authority to do that, it failed to recognize that it had that authority and should at least consider the question in this context.
Well, Mr. Alanis did not raise any argument before the Veterans Court that this error had a natural effect of causing him prejudice. Therefore, he's waived any argument of that sort, and there is no determination by the Veterans Court on that subject that the court could consider. The Supreme Court didn't leave open the possibility of the adoption of a per se rule, and instead referring only to empirically based generalizations. And the Veterans Court is the court that could establish through its seeing numerous cases whether there's a possibility of veterans not meeting evidentiary burdens in certain situations. And that's not what Mr. Alanis is seeking to apply here. He's creating a very broad and vague standard that can't be squared with Congress's requirement that the Veterans Court take due account of the rule of prejudicial error in 38 U.S.C. Section 7261b2. The typically applied rule from civil cases, if you don't mind, Your Honor, I'll just finish my sentence. The typically applied rule from civil cases is simply that a claimant must explain to the Veterans Court how the error to which he points could have made any difference, the court in Sanders said at page 413. And if the court has no further questions,
I have a quick question. This is Judge Chen. I heard opposing counsel today connect his proposed natural effects rule to the VA's duty to assist. And so, therefore, if there is perhaps a hole in his case, there's nonetheless a duty to assist. Can you speak to that?
Yes, Your Honor. Again, this is the type of standard that Mr. Allen is proposing would simply do away with the rule of harmless error that Congress has explained that the Veterans Court must apply. The Veterans Court has the responsibility to consider the record and consider whether this error can have any prejudice, and it's up to the appellant to explain what that prejudice is. And a rule that has to do with the duty of duty to assist and sort of a which we understood from his reply brief that Mr. Alanis was not raising this argument, but an argument of that sort would simply open as a per se rule would mean that no error would ever be found to be harmless. So if the court has no further questions, we request the court dismiss the appeal for the reasons we've discussed or affirm the decision of the Veterans Court.
Thank you. Mr. Dohakis, you have 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have several points. I hope to get to them all. With regard to the multi-symptom finding, the Secretary points to the examiner's statement that it is not a multi-system or multi-symptom, and I don't know that the interchangeability of those words really matters. But nothing in the board's decision said that he did not have a multi-symptom illness. Again, going back to the statute 7261C, the Veterans Court cannot make initial fact findings. They review decisions and findings of the board. And on appendix page 5-6, I just want to read here because I think this has been a little confused as to what exactly the Veterans Court did. To the extent that appellant asserts that his psoriasis could constitute an MUCMI pursuant to 3.317, he appears to contend that the board should have considered whether etiology or pathophysiology of his psoriasis is inconclusive. And that's exactly what he argued. So the Secretary's assertion that he waived some argument this argument was not waived. Further down in the next paragraph, he talks about raised for the first time in his reply brief that the examinations were inadequate, and that's the issue that the Veterans Court said was waived, not that the regulation should apply if the etiology or pathophysiology were inconclusive. So that question was squarely before the court, and the court assumed that was the error, but then said that it's harmless, again, ignoring that the board should have made additional fact-finding. With regard to the examination that we talked about, that's just one piece of evidence that the board considers under 5107.
Do you recall what the argument was before the board? Raised to the board?
I do not, Your Honor. I do believe it. I won't speculate. I don't know. I just focused on what was argued to the court.
My understanding was just about whether the psoriasis was an undiagnosed illness. And the board concluded, no, it's not undiagnosed because it's diagnosed as psoriasis.
Yes, Your Honor. That I would say is not necessarily a fatal to this issue because the board has an obligation, statutory and regulatory, to apply all laws and to assess anything that's reasonably raised. Clearly, it was reasonably raised because the remand order asked an examiner to discuss whether it qualified for the MUCMI presumption. Um, the duty to assist is important to this. We are not arguing.
Would you wrap up in a sentence, please?
Okay. Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. We're not arguing that there was an error in the duty to assist, but that the duty to assist helps to inform why errors like this are naturally produced prejudice, and the Simmons Court explains why most pro se rules don't work, but that analysis does not apply to this error, and it would be quite narrow errors that would be naturally producing prejudice.
Thank you. Thanks to all counsel, and the case is submitted.